Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal health and well-being and our total environment. We're talking about your mental health, physical health, spiritual health, and the health of your family, your community, and our society. We're talking about healthy food, water, air, and earth, healthy social policies, and healthy values every week on Connect the Dot with different thought leaders, experts, scientists, advocates, filmmakers, doctors, and a whole host of other people. We talk about a different facet of a major story, a major area of society that impacts our health. And today we're going to be landing on one of my favorite topics with someone who has just done an extraordinary, eye-opening film. It's called The Brainwashing of My Dad, and I'm so delighted to have here today on our show the film director, Jen Sanko. Welcome back to Connect the Dots, Jen. It's your second time on the show, so lovely to have you back again.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be back. I'm an old pro now, right?
That's right. That's right.
Nice to be back.
Well, you are. Well, you've been crisscrossing the country since we, last had you on the show. I heard about Jen's film and saw it as a work in progress and was so keen on the topic that we did a show before the film was even released. And now the film is in theatrical release, and, you're able to see it. You're able to see it in cities across the country and communities across the country where the film itself is playing in theatrical release. You're able to see it in video on demand, on iTunes. In fact, it's really almost, one of these timings that couldn't be perfect, as you listeners will discover when we talk about the film. Just give our listeners, Jen, if you would, just a brief description of what the film is about.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it's sort of a hybrid documentary. It's kind of about two things. I look at the development and the birth of right-wing media through the lens of my father. My dad was a Kennedy Democrat, very open-minded. Both my parents were very open-minded, helping your neighbor, very loving people. And then in the late 80s, when his commute to work changed, he used to ride in a carpool with a bunch of guys. He was now by himself in a car, and so he turned to talk radio. And at the time, it was Bob Grant, who was the bombastic, openly racist, sexist radio host. And, so he would hear him days on end, and eventually my dad started changing, and I became alarmed at the changes I was seeing. He started caring about things that I never knew he cared about before. I guess one of the things that I cite in the movie is one time I was coming down from New York by bus, and he picked me up at the bus station, and we drove past a Hooters, and he said he just started ranting about how feminists didn't want women with their breasts hanging out working at Hooters. And I said something like, "Well, Dad, maybe they have a point." And he got so angry that he threatened to pull the car over and have me hitchhike home. I'm kind of giggling now, but it was really disturbing at the time, because I'm sure he had never even walked into a Hooters before. He probably mm-hmm. didn't know what one was until, he heard actually Rush Limbaugh mention it. So signs like this and him starting to talk about how wonderful SUVs were, and this from a man who had us record every cent of gasoline and the mileage in a little book from, the car that we drove, the family car. So it was just crazy to me. I didn't understand it, and it did send off some alarm bells.
So, you know, what was actually happening was that your father's views, his values, his, you know, he kind of were taken over, and he adopted a whole bunch of other opinions through listening to this that were actually irrelevant to who he was and what he had previously believed. You know, would you have described him before as like an angry, opinionated person?
No, not at all. You know, my dad would just talk to anybody. I mean, if we were on the bad side of town, let's say, and walking in a dark alley, he might stop to talk to somebody, and my mom would, come on, Frank, you know, hurry up, let's move along, you know. They were both so open-minded. They didn't even gossip like other neighbors did, or friends of mine, parents. Like, they didn't even gossip. So it was totally different, opposite of what I grew up and knew him to be like.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he basically turned himself away, you know, was in a situation initially where he was kind of filling some time, but then ultimately this began to take over his available time, and instead of relating to people, he was really relating to these opinions that were coming at him over the radio. And so then you began both filming him and also probing into this whole phenomenon, and, you know, of like talk radio and where it came from. And so that's what's so terrific about the film, is that, you know, through this personal story, you really open a wide angle and an in-depth picture on what's, you know, a media phenomenon in our time. And, you know, one of the things that actually stunned me when I recently saw the full and completed film was that you mentioned, you had a statistic in the film that 95% of talk radio in this country is right-wing.
97.
So this show is actually in the 3% of being a talk radio show that's progressive. And so, you know, it kind of gives an idea of what we're up against and how many millions of people are, you know, listening to this and, you know, having their ideas distorted by it. Do you have any sense of that?
Well, to go back to your first point about what he became, it became all important to him. When he discovered Rush Limbaugh, he would sit in the kitchen for 3 hours and eat his lunch and listen to Rush Limbaugh. So my parents stopped eating lunch together. You know, this was now, by this time he was retired. And then he discovered Fox News. And then he would actually have Fox on in the kitchen and Rush Limbaugh, and would mute Fox when Rush wasn't advertising. That became his priority. And so every his single purpose became repeating what he heard on Fox News or Rush Limbaugh to anybody within earshot. And then when emailing came in, we started getting tons of email, and that's when the family became alarmed. Like, okay, there is what is going on? And we begged him, please don't send us these emails, because they're really like nasty, you know, and mean spirited, and some of them obvious lies, like being made up, and you could easily go to Snopes and check it out. No, that's not true. And he wouldn't stop. So that became like his single purpose. So I just wanted to complete that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were saying, do I have a sense of how much this is happening to other people?
How many people are kind of gotten taken over? It's like the invasion of the body snatchers or something.
Exactly. Well, if you believe in 6 degrees of separation, I'll bet you every sixth person knows someone who this has happened to in their family or their friends or their loved ones. because what happened is when I started the Kickstarter campaign, we had 947 backers, and we started hearing from them. But then I don't know how word got out, but maybe they started telling their friends. People just started emailing me about their stories, like, this happened to my mom, this happened to my sister, this happened to my brother, this happened to my entire family. I can't go visit them anymore. They won't have me. Or my dad, you know, kicked me out of his house, or, you know, disowned me because I was dating someone outside of my race. It seemed like this is a phenomenon, you know. Mm-hmm. Or now I'm describing it more like an epidemic because, mm-hmm. you know, I became like the Ann Landers of, oh, this happened to my mom or dad, you know, because I would write these people because they all felt so alone and they were all so frustrated and just sickened by the change that they experienced with their loved one and the dissociation from them. You know what I mean? Like the family, they were like, that became more important than the family. Their views became more important.
So it really, although that's really an interesting side note there, because even though it's purporting to, you know, be a defender, a protector of family values, actually family by family by family, and then nationwide, it's actually undermining family values, it's undermining family relationships, it's undermining community values and community relationships, while, you know, it's basically claiming, you know, I'm the great defender of this in my outrage, and it's in fact having, I mean, and now we can, obviously, it's fairly obvious, we can see it writ large where, you know, people are wondering where the, you know, audiences for Trump's outrageous comments comes from. And, you know, yet this has been growing and building. And, you know, because America is such an individualistic society, it's kind of like the people in whose families this has happened know about it. But if it's not happening in your family, and, you know, then you kind of just don't even know what's going on, really. Mm-hmm. And so we're really kind of living in our little niches and kind of ignorant. Although I have to say that after seeing the film, I was, you know, went to the dentist and I was, you know, couldn't stop talking about the film everywhere I went. And, you know, and somebody there was like, oh, yeah, that happened to my father. And actually you scratch the surface and you start talking about it. And and it's actually is happening all around you, but people are ashamed, you know, to even bring it up. I mean, you were quite courageous, you know, to kind of go right into it and, you know, begin
to. I was so frustrated by it.
Yeah, yeah. How many years overall did this whole thing go on in your family approximately? I mean, how many years? You said this began in the 80s?
I'd say.
That's a long time.
I'd say we lost him for a good, like, 20 years, possibly. Because he was really anti-Clinton. I don't do math in my head.
That's okay. But, well, we get the rough idea. You went around and you interviewed a lot of experts, and, like, you know, afterward, like, exploring where this came from and what it's all about. And so, you know, you went from the picture of what was going on in your family to kind of the bigger picture,
right,
where, you know, so, and what did you find out?
Yeah, I just wanted to get to the bottom of it. Actually, Hillary stated it in 1993. Nobody likes the word conspiracy because you always think wing nut, but it was a vast right-wing conspiracy. In that, it started, probably started actually after FDR, you know, and the social programs and the country becoming more democratic and community oriented in a way, but I trace it back to really when they pumped it up. It was in the 60s when Goldwater lost to Johnson in a massive landslide. Like if you look at a map, and I show a map in the movie, like the country is all blue. You know, there's maybe like two or three states that are red. And nobody wanted to be a conservative. You know, they said the right wing is dead. You know, everybody wanted to be a liberal. So they decided that they were going to start to strike back via the media, one, by spreading the word that the media was biased, that it was liberal. So that's where that whole liberal media thing came out of, you know, that just became a mantra, a chant, you know, liberal media. And they created a couple organizations that would, hassle the media or, you know, monitor them and hassle them and pressure them. And that was sort of the beginning of going from objectivity to balance, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So that's sort of where it goes, and then I kind of go into Roger Ailes, who is the chairman and creator of Fox News, and how he was working with Nixon to help him get elected, make him more appealing to people on TV, because he did so badly on television, you know, next yeah. to Kennedy, you know, sweaty mm-hmm. upper lip, like shifty eyes. You know, Kennedy was like cool, suave, handsome, mm-hmm. collected, you know, and mm-hmm. just came across as honest. And so Roger Ailes, who isn't like amazing in television, he was like a television producer. He took Nixon aside and was like, look, you know, you got to get with the program here. you learn how to use makeup and sound bites and, you know, appeal to the masses of people, you know, because how else are you going to get them on board? And so that was one thing. And then so he got ensconced in the White House. And then when he was in the White House, there was a memo going around called How to Get the GOP on TV News. And it was literally like a blueprint for Fox. And Roger Ailes' handwriting is all over saying, you know, people are dumb. They want their thinking done for them. 59% get their news off of TV. They trust TV. That kind of thing. So later on, when Rupert Murdoch was looking to create Fox News, Roger Ailes was the perfect person to choose. So I don't know if I'm going on too much, but anyway, that's some of it. And then I go into the Lewis Powell memo and, you know,
the thing is that it was, this didn't happen by accident. It's not
at
like,
all.
No, it was kind of orchestrated.
Orchestrated, very well organized, brilliantly organized. And for anybody that says the left does the same thing, no, they're not disorganized. They weren't this determined. It just didn't happen. I mean, plus the money machine wasn't behind it. Like you had the Coke money, you know, you had the Coors money, you had the Mellonscapes, you had all of these really rich businessmen, usually old white businessmen, that were behind this movement. Like they didn't like seeing that the country was going towards a kinder, gentler, you know, let's get everybody on the same thing page. And they wanted to bring it back, you know, bring mm-hmm. it back to like the 1900s before there were any regulations, you know, and, you know, children could work and women couldn't. And
right.
So.
I mean, you know, I always say when you consider the millions, you know, when people, I mean, their talking point is the left does the same thing. In fact, when one of the producers of the brainwashing of my dad, Matthew Modine, the actor, was on television, you know, there was with some talking heads who looked like they all had kind of been plucked from Fox News. One of the guys said,
Matthew.
Well, that he really held up quite well, I have to say.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he really is. you know what I'm talking about. You saw the clip, obviously, too. But, you know, the, one of the guys feeds back, well, you know, the left does it, too. And the example that I use, because as regular listeners will know, I've been covering the TPP and the other toxic trade deals now for about 2.5-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those deals were kept secret. And, you know, there was a mainstream media blackout on it. You know, nobody was covering them. A lot of people did not believe at the time that that could be so, but now with the situation with Bernie Sanders, more people understand that the establishment corporate media does block things out. It was happening with the trade deals, and to make matters worse, their provisions were secret. So there was, so people could then say, well, we don't know. Well, we don't know because they've made the provisions secret, and they're not covering it. So that was our situation. And at the time, WikiLeaks was saying, you know, people give money because when we get $100,000, we're going to get an insider, you know, and compensate them to release some of the terms and provisions of the deal so that the public has some ability to analyze what's going on since they were held secret. Well, you know, people gave 25 here, 25 there. That no one wrote a check for 100K and said,
right,
here you go, publish them. We need to know. You know, all
right,
the people who had the kind of money to do that were probably, you know, happy that they weren't being published, and there isn't the same kind of donor base on the liberal or progressive side. So, you know, that's all just a big absurdity, and it's unfortunate. So films like The Brainwashing of My Dad and all of the independent media is really functioning in a, you know, a, I mean, you did it by a Kickstarter, you know, so it, so people who care about and share these same values really, you know, have to step up to support and buy, you know, a film like this when it comes along. And, you know, I'm going to ask you in a minute how people can do that. And also to support, you know, the independent outlets, because we grew up in a time where advertising and other supports were in place for, you know, some public funding was in place for places like PBS and NPR. Now that, you know, corporate donors have come in to fill the coffers, we're not getting the same quality of coverage. And people are, I think, waking up to it, and the next step is really to support quality efforts like yours. So how can listeners of Connect the Dots do that?
Well, first of all, thank you for referring to it as the corporate media. I have spoken to liberals who insist on calling it the liberal media. It's corporate media versus independent media. So I think one of the things that we would like to see come out of the film is that people do read and support their, you know, their independent media of choice. And there's some great outlets for that. I don't have the card in front of me, but we have it all on our website. You know, even if it's like a couple dollars here and there, that adds up. Like, look at Bernie's campaign. You know, none of that is big money. It's all money from the little people, us little people, you know. You know, that's one really big thing. And I think another is, you know, speak up. If you hear something ridiculously said, sometimes people are just bullies. Like, my mom will be in the waiting room of a doctor's office, and maybe one man will start going on about actually the liberal media, this, in this particular case, or whatever it is, and she'll say, it's not liberal media. It's owned by six corporations, so how could it be? You know, and he just looked at her and, you know, kind of shut up. Or, like, she'll go into a doctor's office and she'll see Fox on, and she'll say, I don't find this fair and balanced at all. Can you please change the station? You know, just all these little things help. People don't want to speak up. I understand that. But we have to go outside our comfort zone and do things unless we want this country to you know, it's already lost a lot of its democracy. So, yeah, and then there's one small thing that people can do right now on Hear Yourself Think and code.org and code pink. There's a petition you can sign to get Fox out of the YMCA. You know, so I mean, sometimes you have to start small like that, and that really helps. And then
well,
language.
That's a great initiative. That's a great initiative because wherever these outlets are, they are, you know, influencing the thinking of other people. So by just kind of going, oh well,
it
what can
powerful.
I do? And you know, you're kind of, if we don't do anything, we're allowing that to continue. And then we're looking at a phenomenon like Donald Trump and saying, oh dear, you know, what
How
can we do to
happen?
Prevent this? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And, you know, it's a big deal. So I just want to say that listeners, you can go to the website www.thebrainwashingofmydad.com. And when you hit the little thing in the upper right and it opens up the, you know, list of things that you can find out about, you can go to Where to Watch, which will show, you know, you can see theatrical screenings that are, you know, happening in different places. You can go to Video on Demand and view it right now. You can purchase it on DVD. And these guys who've been doing this extraordinary coverage and, you know, out of a Kickstarter campaign are still earning back all the money that was invested in it by true believers, and so you can join their ranks simply by going to see, acquiring a video, gifting a video or a DVD of this, you know, to other people, posting about it on Facebook or any other media outlet that you use, telling people about it. And certainly, if you know people in whose families this has happened or people who are wondering, what can I do, this goes right to the heart of the derailment of democracy through the derailment of the independent media that is there to not support everyone in power and fearfully not say anything, which kind of makes us afraid to say anything, but to forthrightly, you know, inform people so that we know what we're about. And when that gets diluted, when people are brainwashed, when misinformation is put out there and not corrected, when we just kind of turn the other way and allow it to go on, then we are all unfortunately drafted into enabling this. And, you know, as someone who's been in the media since 1979, personally, you know, I see the changing role that we've had. And, you know, actually, I just want to bring this up, too. Glenn Greenwald, a terrific Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who has a wonderful website online called The Intercept, and they have terrific reporting on there, points out that even the acceptance of a Donald Trump, where, you know, he's been given a huge platform by the media, you know, showing him to get ratings, regardless of the ill effects of promoting this guy freely in their outlet, and the fact that journalists in those outlets are afraid to call him out, as you were courageously calling out the people who brainwashed your father, Jen, you know, and he said that, you know, people have the... Yeah. I mean, brave, I think, brave. You know, and so there's a fiction out
there. I meant me.
Oh, no,
sorry.
No. No, I meant of you, too. I meant of you also. But his point is that this is what journalists do. Journalists do not sit by and be kind of dumbly, you know, quiet and accepting when stuff is going down and just say, well, I'm being fair. It's out there. I'll present it. You know, that's not the traditional role of journalism, Greenwald points out. And actually, it's like what you have done in The Brainwashing of My Dad, what people are doing in the independent media, what should be happening in so-called liberal outlets like MSNBC, is to question this, not to just say, oh, you're out there making racist remarks. Let it roll. We'll show it. You know, so you
like,
are a true journalist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just
and
saying this because some people think that's fair. So talk a little bit, if you would, about like the whole fair and balanced thing, the idea of, you know, what is – what reporting is and what's fair to talk about and what's balanced and where we are in all of that.
Mm-hmm. David Brock talks about that a lot, and through Media Matters and in the book The Republican Noise Machine, and makes a great point that journalism used to be about objectivity and truth seeking, but by the right, the powerful business interests pushing the country to the right, one of the things they pushed was, the media should be fair. You know, if you have a conservative on, and most of the time I don't even think of these people as conservatives because there's nothing wrong with conservatives. This is like far-right stuff, and it's passed as conservatives. But anyway, they say if you have a so-called conservative on, you have a liberal on, you have to have a conservative. You know, so what ends up happening is the liberal is like really watered down, and the quote-unquote conservative is like really radical far right, and it just keeps pushing the country more to the right. But what what worked really well, like during Walter Cronkite days, was objectivity. You know, just reporting the news, reporting facts, and not all this opinion. Like Fox News, if you look at that, it's largely opinion. There's a lot of opinion, undisguised opinion. You know, and Rush Limbaugh, of course, and those guys, that's like all ranting opinions. I would just make that case that, journalism should work at being more objective rather than, fair and balanced. One of the examples that I give in the film, actually, is about climate denial. There's like 99% of 2,400 scientists agree that man is contributing to climate volatility, and four scientists who are well-funded by the coal industry, et cetera, disagree. So they guilt the mainstream media and say you have to have them on too. And so, that may be fair, but I would argue that that's balanced. That's really kind of imbalanced in more ways than one.
Well, it's psychologically imbalanced when you think of how the end result of all of this is going to affect people. But it's also imbalanced because the 4% of scientists who are in the pocket of somebody who disagree don't represent. They're not 50%, are they? They're 4%. So right away, that's not balanced. If you have to, they don't conversely go digging around, to find somebody, who thinks that, we should live on air every time they talk about nutrition or diet, for example. That represents, a minority, an extreme minority position of some kind. So they don't have to represent every shade of opinion. It's only in these dangerous matters that they do this. And, of course, the very industries that are funding these minority, scientists who have diverged from overwhelming scientific opinion are the same industries that are funding advertising or owning some of these some of this corporate media. So but what happens to the average person is that I'm so glad you brought this up, because we hear this distorted idea, it has to be balanced, of course we have to hear from them. And, when it's said 20,000 times, in effect, we have been brainwashed. We haven't been brainwashed to quite the extent, that the listeners, of Fox News have been brainwashed. Obviously, it's not exactly comparable, but we have sort of swallowed something because it's been repeated, because it's been spin, that sort of disables us from participating.
Right.
You know?
That, yeah. That's right. I mean, it sort of just gets into the atmosphere, you know, people, you know, the other thing pointed out in the film is, you know, how media is like an ecosystem. And, you know, like, look, CNN is competing with Fox News. I think MSNBC recently is, you know, kind of competing with Fox News. It affects everything, and people just absorb this information and disinformation, whether they're conscious of it or not. It's quite unfortunate.
And when you say competing, it's as in, how can we be like them to get the ratings? You know, because
correct,
they're not value-driven. They're not saying, oh, well, we have to hold up our side, you know, yada-da-yada-da. It's, you know.
Right. We better have some more raging heads.
Really?
Not just talking heads, they're raging heads.
Yeah, they are. They're, yeah, raging heads. That's funny.
Right. Yeah, I just came
and
up with
scary.
That.
And it's scary. Mm-hmm. It's scary, too, you know, to listen to this kind of thing mm-hmm. out and about with these people. You know, they're scary. So, of course, there's a natural instinct to kind of want to go, well, I hope it's okay, you know, because, but because if it isn't, you know, how do you take a stand? And of course, you know, with somebody who is irrational, raging, bigoted, programmed, and of course, we, in order to have a role model of, you know, how to do that, we have to look no further than, you know, you and your mother, obviously, who she did not, you know, dump your father, which some people may have been done or been tempted to do.
She was tempted to at one point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, but she hung in there. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, every time I hear about your mother or, you know, what she did, I'm like, you know, what excuse do any of us have to kind of ignore this or be gutless when she, mm-hmm. you know, this ordinary, regular, you know, housewifely woman of the mm-hmm. older generation had the guts to deal with it. I mean, how did she cope with it?
Mm-hmm. Well, during those years, it was really destructive to, and disturbing to her. So she, for instance, she wouldn't eat lunch with my dad, and they figured out they could not really talk about politics. However, what they ended up settling upon doing without speaking about it, both my brothers and I just had to block my dad's emails. So my mother and dad would sit in the same office, the same room, you know, back to back at their computers, sending emails, and my dad would send his emails like, you know, like an angry rocket ship, you know, hit my mother's computer. My mother would go online and research and get sources and, you know, send emails back saying, no, that's not true, and this is what this is. And he'd send angry emails back, you know, and then they'd, like, get up and go, okay, what's for dinner?
Wow.
So,
That's amazing.
Yeah. They couldn't talk about it, or they sometimes they would get in fights about it, and then they wouldn't speak for days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes he would find company and people that agreed with him, and then she'd be in the midst of it, and you know, they'd be having this conversation, and she would just have to say something like, you know, you know, can we not talk about politics, or I find this not productive or incorrect. But yeah, she stuck it out. Although one point in her 70s, I remember she wrote me, she was so frustrated. She was like, I think I have to get my own apartment. And I was like, Mom, you know, whatever you decide to do, I support you. But fortunately, she didn't do that. She just hung in there. And then, too, they also got these big doors on the kitchen, so she wouldn't have to listen to Rush Limbaugh when my dad listened to him or to Fox News, because she found him, when she heard him, she found him to be unchristian sounding, that he just sounded mean and not nice. You know, so she didn't like that. I don't know. She was. They're both intelligent. You know, my dad was an electronic engineer and he had his master's degree, but he was sort of gullible. Like, you could kind of talk him into things, you know, more easily. My mom wasn't as gullible, so I think that may be a little bit of the difference there too.
Well, she was a reporter, so she was like, I mean, she had the nature of a reporter. She's doing research, she's skeptical, she's, you know, testing her ideas to see, you know, if they are validated. You know, I mean, you can see where, you know, maybe you taught her or she taught you, but there's something going on there, you know, that was terrific, in fact. And then when, you know, when I... saw the film at its New York debut, I didn't really, you know, I wasn't aware of kind of how, I don't know if we want to give away the ending, actually, but, you know, for people who you know, who watch it. But I will say that it's a hopeful and not a, you know, it's not a despairing ending, which is really quite amazing, given, you know, what we're talking about here. It's, you know, it's really quite inspiring, and I think we all could kind of take a message and a motivation from it. What has been the response to the film, Jen, The Brainwashing of My Dad, since, you know, you have now been, it's been out there, it's been reviewed, people have been seeing it, you know, what has been the response?
It's been overwhelming, really. I'm just... really incredulous, excuse me, and grateful for the response. It's been overwhelmingly positive. I think people are sort of relieved by it. You know, the main thing I kind of get is like, oh, finally, somebody's saying this or putting this together. The pieces of the puzzle are kind of fitting together. And then they're also sort of emotionally moved by it, and they're entertained by it. So I've been really, just like I said, just incredulous at the response. I've had so many interviews too. It's just been amazing. And then people, just regular people will email me, like, you know, you can see, read the pain in their email. Like, I'm so glad I saw this, and you know, my father cut me out of his will, and I posted a lot of people's stories on the website as well. It's under other cool things. The website is getting kind of bulky, but yeah, the response has been really good, really good,
and
really amazing.
I heard that Rush Limbaugh actually responded to the film, which is obviously critical of him and debunks him to a large extent. What did what was his response?
Well, there was one review that wasn't great, and that was pardon me, in the New York Times. Excuse me, and he was. More, you know, it was just saying, well, this isn't anything new. You know, everybody knows this stuff, something like that.
And oh, I saw that. That was so stupid. Yeah.
I didn't read it. I didn't really have time to read it, and I didn't. But anyway, I think that's, I heard that that's what he was responding to. And when I went to L.A., the premiere there, there was someone in the audience that actually listens to Rush Limbaugh, and he knows me because I had produced a short narrative film that he was in, and he said that he heard Rush Limbaugh talking about me. He's like, oh, I know Jen Senko. Oh, my God. I was just so surprised, anyway, to hear that he did write, write or rant about it. But from what I understand, he wasn't too rough on me. I think he did say something, which I knew people would say, like, oh, she used her dad or something like that. I don't know. Did you read it?
I think I read something quoting it, and mm-hmm. He sounded really offended, and I thought that was great. And I mean, he managed to, he actually felt defensive. I mean, wow. I mean, it's great to put somebody like that on the defensive, bravo. I mean, the New York Times, I did read that review, and that guy was so clueless. He was like, in some ivory tower where, there's just infinite funding for anything. And, the whole fact that you, raise money from people broke through on a topic that really has been off limits. And certainly, the New York Times hasn't done any kind of exploration of it at all.
No.
It's very sort of sour grapes of him to say that and very clueless. But, I think that I've actually been noticing that some of the articles in the New York Times are not very well written lately. Poorly written. I don't know if it's the editors or they're hiring very junior reporters that they don't pay much to. I'm not sure what the reason for it is, but I was looking at it and they're actually a lot less polished than what you see almost anywhere else. I was rather taken, sort of stunned to see that. So I think maybe they just, I've seen them having someone who's essentially really ignorant of a topic and isn't really doing their homework report on it. So that's, that happens
mm-hmm.
too. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that is what I heard, that the article was really shoddily written and wasn't
mm-hmm.
very long. So I was surprised to hear that, But I was even more surprised that Rush Limbaugh commented on it. It's a little scary, actually.
Yeah, I can understand that. You don't want to be known to him or to.
No, not really. He did spell out my last name. He made sure he spelled out my last name on his radio show.
No.
That I thought was a little bit cheap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they have too much of a platform to attack people and do harm. I can understand why you'd be concerned about that. Once again, listeners, we're talking about the brainwashing of my dad. We're talking with the film director, auteur in the French sense, Jen Senko. And you can go to the website and you can see the film, which is, there's a lot, we're covering, some themes from the film, but there's a lot more there because the film, Jim interviews a very wide range of knowledgeable people, and there are a number of media critics, authors, people who really have been studying this, and a lot of background information as to how this sort of media takeover came about. It wasn't just sort of spontaneous, as we've noted earlier in the program. So, do get the film on video on demand or DVD, or look for it in your local theaters, and you can find the ways to do that on the website, The Brainwashing of My Dad.
People can also sign up for updates on the website. So when we're going to be screening somewhere, we will send out like a short email update. So people who get the updates are they and the Kickstarter people are among the first to hear about it. And then they can also write back and say, well, do you think you could bring your film here, to this town or this theater? They'll give us suggestions for where else we could screen it. But so they can also sign up for updates,
mm-hmm.
which we don't abuse it. We just, when something's happening, we'll send out an update. In fact, sometimes we get complaints that we don't update you enough. We just don't, we don't want to overdo it. But they can
well,
sign up on
the website. Bring the film to Left Forum in New York, too, so there'll be further opportunities. So where can is the film, I know the film has had its theatrical release in a few locations, so are you just kind of touring around? Are you going to be coming back to some of the major metro areas, or, you know, what is your distribution game plan in terms of, you know, where people can see the film?
Well, we're just sort of distributing it that theatrically by ourselves. We'll like I said, we'll have people contact us on Facebook and say, oh, can you bring it to this town in Memphis, Tennessee? And we'll write back, and do you, you know, is it realistic? Is there a theater there that you could suggest? And we just write to the theater, and we tell them about the films and send them some links. And if they're interested, they ask for a screener, and we give them an online screener. And then we'll arrange for it to be seen there. And actually, we've got about 15 other theaters around the country. And then there's various, like, church groups, you know, maybe Unitarian Church or different types of community groups that we have a special thing for the nonprofit sector, you know, if they want to write us and have it shown there. And whenever anybody wants to have me come out, if they want to, you know, help get me out there, then I'm happy to do that as well.
Oh, that's terrific. So you're really going out in the land. You know, do people talk a lot about the current election and the current candidates, or, you know, what do you hear when you go out and about in terms of what, you know, how this film both relates to people but also opens up a larger conversation about what's going on right now in our country?
Right. We get that a lot. We get, you know, how it relates to Donald Trump. And, you know, it sort of answers questions for them, like not only how Trump was created, but how his followers were created. It's really weird, but I could tell, like, about a year ago, before he had an inkling or mentioned he was going to run for president, I said to myself, he's watching Fox News. I can tell by what he's saying. So, and so he intuitively is just tapping in to the people that either watched Fox or listened to Mark Levin or Alex Jones or you know, Rush Limbaugh. He is tuning in to their anger, like, almost intuitively, and that's I guess what a lot of people realize or are talking about, that that he's picking up on that and just somehow able to spew those talking points, and people just know it feels familiar, it feels good, it strikes the same angry feelings, you know, and it feels good to them. It's emotional. Emotion is easy to get. So they're reacting to him on an emotional level, obviously an angry emotional level.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that in the, you know, kind of remaining 4 or 5 minutes that we have for the show here, which is, you know, in effect, these people maybe themselves are angry, you know, and they don't have an outlet to really express it because they have to, you know, toe the line or keep the job they have or whatever it is they're doing. And he's, you know, do you have an understanding through doing this or through your father of, you know, what people are actually angry about, like, you know, that he's kind of tapping into and releasing for them in some kind of way?
Well, I think that people know that something is not as good, the things aren't as good as they should be. So mm-hmm. what these right-wing outlets are doing are just telling everybody who they can blame, like, well, blame the poorer people, blame the takers, mm-hmm. blame your taxes, blame government, you know, when they don't realize that it's been like 30 years of trickle-down economics and deregulation and, mm-hmm. you know, outsourcing from that, outsourcing of jobs, pay that's stagnant, and you know, it's they know, the right knows what buttons to press, and they understand thoroughly that they have to get them to look over here. Don't look here, just look over here, and these are the people you blame. You know, look at these dark people that either blow stuff up or, you know, harass the cops and get themselves killed and get the cops in trouble. They just know how to push those anger buttons. And, you know, there's several techniques that they use to do that. You know, as I mentioned, like, I talked to a neuroscientist who talks about the different types of brainwashing. You know, one is through coercive force, you know, where you have, like, the psychological torture where people, you know, it's like the camps, the brainwashing camps. People are put through horrors and, you know, browbeaten into believing something, you know. And then there's the brainwashing by stealth, which is where it's not so much that they're forced to believe stuff, it's just that all the information that comes at them is pushing that same line, and there's no alternative in terms of the information. And then, you know, the repetition is used over and over and over. So, you know, if a lie is repeated often enough, it's believed. So these people believe all these lies, and Trump is just repeating them. And but they don't understand really what they should be angry at, because I call it the period of the great bamboozle. People have been, you know, it's really taken advantage of and bamboozled, and it's, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, other people will say, well, they're stupid, or, you know, they should mm-hmm. know better, but it's, I don't think that they're stupid people. I just, for whatever reason, like my father, they just don't understand what's going on. They don't have time to really, really look into it. They like the way this message is being presented. It feels good. You know, it's almost like there's an addiction to anger, because there's an excitement to it. And so they're just reacting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, rather than thinking.
Right, and they don't, because of the other media shutdown, it becomes a 1-2 punch. It's easier to get your news there, and the other media is, you know, kind of bypassing the issues of real concern to them in terms of mm-hmm. any kind of analysis, so it's not so easy to find. So we really have a kind of 1-2 punch there. We're coming to the end of our time here, and it's been terrific, Jen. Thank you so much for doing this extraordinary film, and for all the work and the caring and everything that's gone into it. Mm-hmm. And thank you, listeners, for being with us today on Connect the Dots. And please do go to the website, The Brainwashing of My Dad, and see the film. If you actually would like it to come to your area, you can contact Jen through the site or on Facebook. You know, there's a Brainwashing of My Dad page as well there. And, you know, make sure that you see the film. You can distribute the radio show to your friends so more people know about it. You know, hope many, many, many more people see this and the whole conversation about it grows. Jen, hope so very much.
Thank you, Allison. I appreciate it. It was
great
being
thank
here.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's really, you know, this is a film after my own heart, which I think everyone can tell. So thank you, listeners, for being with us this week on Connect the Dots. We'll be back with you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Meanwhile, be well.